Welcome to A Life Well Lived. Grow, preserve, and transfer your wealth with Ken Ouellette, CPM Certified Portfolio Manager and founder of Orca Wealth Management. In this podcast, he will provide some clarity in setting goals needed to build, preserve, and transfer wealth, and overcome some of life's financial obstacles. Ken provides actionable steps to help you plan through your financial ups and downs in a way everyone can understand. Join us on this journey where Ken will explore many financial avenues, drawing from his three decades of experience in helping others avoid risking a lifetime's worth of work and savings by not having a plan and a strategy in place. Now, on to the show.
Don, good morning.
Good morning, Ken. Here we are on another bright and cheery day, ready to go. You all set?
Yeah, it's not so bright and cheery here. It's about 48 degrees and heavy drizzle. So,
well, it's raining here too, but it's how, you know, it's how you look at things.
Yeah, I like your outlook.
Yeah.
That's a good outlook for this podcast.
Yes.
So you recently got back from Las Vegas.
We did. Sin City.
Yeah.
And it was an interesting experience. And of course, the best part of it, we did, there's two actually. We got there and we went to the Sphere. We didn't see you two, but we saw the movie that goes there. And it was a great experience. Very positive, fun. And it was neat. It was really neat.
So,
and of course, the biggest thing.
Which was?
Adele.
Oh, okay.
We bought the tickets just we got lucky. A friend of ours said, hey, I have, you know, and we got in and we actually made it and bought the tickets. And it was, oh my God, that was so much fun.
So just so I'm clear on this. So I'm having you on my podcast and you're spending your vacation time in Vegas. So isn't that kind of just seems like a dentist with dentures or a really overweight personal trainer?
Oh my God. Now let's change our attitudes here.
So I mean,
that was actually like the first vacation we've taken in 3 years, really, of a nice, you know, more spending money on.
Well, wouldn't it be better like to go to the Smithsonian or something educational versus Vegas, which is a perfect lead in to today's topic, which is FOMO, fear of missing out, because Vegas is the hotbed for people who have a fear of missing out.
Oh, that reminds me. I gotta check my lottery ticket if I won today.
Exactly.
Wait.
So we're two for two. You go to Vegas and you buy lotto tickets.
Now you're killing me. Just killing me. The lotto is that's only like a few bucks and it's fun. It's more entertainment than anything else.
Well, you'll see that at least it's entertainment value and not financial planning value. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, the tertiary retirement, it's not doing too well.
Yeah, yeah. So good. So we're gonna be able to explore the psychology of Don today in his Vegas trips and lotto tickets. So, you know, when I say fear of missing out, what do you think of that, Don? Just in an outside of an investment perspective, what would fear of missing out be to you,
I think it for me, it's like Black Friday sales and things like that, where it's like, oh my God, I can get that TV for so low and I could beat everyone else. And you know, they're offering it. I can do it.
Right. Would you trample over an elderly person to get that TV on Black Friday? I've never been to Black Friday.
Is it a good sale?
I don't know.
Just joking. No, I've never done a Black Friday either. I prefer sleep. And you know what? It's advertising. They just try to build you up, and then
So it's gone to the extreme now of you don't even have to go to Black Friday, right? You can just wait till a particular hour on your computer and you can just use your computer. What is that, Black of Cyber Monday? Is that what that is?
Yeah. And now Cyber Monday is like all week.
Yeah. Well, so
all advertising.
Yeah, all advertising, and all of this is basically working on that FOMO, which is fear of missing out. And it's really embedded in the human psychology aspect of just there's something in us as a species that we just don't like to miss out on something that everybody else seems to be partaking in. You know, I'm not a psychologist, so I don't know the exact cause of that, but I have seen it invariably in investing. It's a big, big, big problem. So we'll kind of go into, just as an outline for today, we'll talk about what fear of missing out is, you know, how it's harmful, and particularly how it's harmful for the everyday investor, which is who we really try to communicate to, and then how to combat FOMO, fear of missing out, because I think that's a critical aspect to learn.
Hey, you're right. On the market side of it, Ken, is that when all of a sudden you see these huge sways, like one report comes out and everyone gets scared, one report comes out and everyone jumps on and says, oh my gosh, and it's swings?
Yeah, so let's just historically take a look at where we have seen really FOMO play itself out. So here recently, there's a particular AI tech stock. I don't want to name names because I don't want people to jump on and say, well, man, he's that, maybe that's got some more momentum to it. So I don't want to name the particular case right now, but there is a chip stock out there that people, we invariably will start getting calls because it's going up, right? The price is going up and they don't want to miss that movement up. It's like, you know, you want to get on the train and you don't want to miss the train, but you just don't know when to get off the train. Uh-huh. And so historically speaking, we can kind of see that when that train stops, it doesn't just stop, it kind of derails, right? And that's what the big worry is. And so if we go historically speaking, let's look at it. So back when I first started in the early 90s, so it came to the mid 90s, you had the dot-coms, right? You had a lot of people that bought companies, not based off of really anything nor on the basis of the fundamentals, but just on the hope that it was going to work out and that somebody, as we move forward, would pay a greater price for it.
Mm-hmm. That didn't work out too well.
It didn't really work out too well because then, price and value kind of meet at some point. So now then we went into, 2005. Remember how everybody kind of owned real estate? Real estate was a big thing, and you could own two or three properties. You could borrow leverage against it, and everybody's kind of fearful of not owning real estate. I mean, I know that you were kind of working in the school district at that time, so you didn't have a side hustle like everybody has now, but you probably knew people that owned properties.
Yes.
Yeah. And how did it work out well for them?
Well, no, they ended up liquidating two or three, getting down to the primary.
Right. And so, I think that at that point they were, the only thing they were focused and conscious on was the short term, which in the short term in investing, never really works out, right? It causes a problem. If you just focused on what's going to happen next week, next 6 months, 1 year, you typically are not making decisions based off of a plan. And so that's kind of fear of missing out. You're focusing on the short term.
Okay.
And so, that's kind of what we want to avoid.
So, I mean, how is it harmful it's harmful in the long and short, right? Because, I mean, if you make your decisions not based off your plan.
Right. Yeah. And that's why it's so insidious, right? It's harmful because it feels so good in the moment because you're doing really well. And so, it always, in my mind, everything always comes back to value versus price. All right. So my entire investment philosophy has been based off of what is looking at something and what is the value of it. So you have value versus price. So sometimes the price can get obscenely absurd, and then you don't have much value. And sometimes that can go either way, right? The price can go way below what the value of it is intrinsically, we think, or it can go way above. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So, you wouldn't, people get, when they look at investing, they skew kind of the mentality about it. So if you would never go into the store and see milk at $15 a gallon and say, okay, I really need to load up on milk because it's $15 a gallon. Mm-hmm. But if milk goes on sale at, 50 cents a gallon, you'd back the truck up and buy as much as you could. But in investing, when a stock price goes, which is really, maybe it's historically valued by the metrics that we use. Let's say it's a $50 stock, but it goes to 100. Many people will back the truck up and buy it at 100 because they want it to go to 150. Just based off of want, right? And thinking that somebody else will pay a greater price for it. And you would never, if you were a farmer, you would never farm that way. right? You would.
No. Because you keep your plan. You got to keep your, you have a certain amount of fields. You want to keep going on that.
Right. Right. And you wouldn't, because a particular crop is growing really well in the short term on this week, you would not, you know, burn all the other crops and put it all in that crop. Right. Mm-hmm. You would balance out your risk with other produce. And so that's kind of why FOMO, or fear of missing out, can be so attractive. Once, you know, you were in Vegas, so you know they do make that attractive.
Oh my God, bells and whistles.
Yeah, that buffet. I mean, let's be honest.
Yeah. Yeah, and you can only eat so much.
Right, right.
$50 doesn't sound like that bad, or $75 is not that bad.
No, it's not that bad. And then
look at what I get to eat. Yeah.
Right.
But look at all of this, but you can't do it.
And then you get to deal with the aftermath, right?
Yeah.
So that's what we're looking at here. That's why it's so harmful, is because it's basically upending your investment process, your principles, your plan, everything that you're trying to do for just basically short-term speculation. And that's what we try to excise that out of the individual as a financial advisor. We want to get speculation as much as possible out of the process, because we want to ground it in good foundational investments that are going to serve your plan over a long period of time.
This totally reminds me of like the whole marshmallow thing, where if you offer a kid one marshmallow, but you say, okay, if you wait 10 minutes, I'll give you two. And no, they'll take the one.
Yeah, it's an interesting concept. They have it, that really ties into it well. So it's delayed gratification is what you're talking
about. Yeah, and that's cool. You preach that so much is because it truly is. If you can just, you know, do the job for 30, 35 years, you're going to be rocking the next 30.
Right, right. You're going to be in a good place, but you have to stick to your fundamentals. Mm-hmm. And that's the problem with FOMO. You hit it on the head, is that it upsets the fundamentals and the psychology of the investor. So when we're looking at, so another piece of fear of missing out is that's closely assigned with it is the greater fool theory. Have you heard this theory before, Don?
Keep going.
All right. The greater fool theory means you basically are going to buy something in hopes that somebody, not you, is going to pay more for it than you paid for it. And then that person is looking for the next greater fool, and so on. And so eventually you run out of fools.
Yeah.
And that's when you get the train derailment. Right. So mm-hmm. When your investment philosophy is based off of FOMO and the greater fool theory, you can get yourself in trouble. And when I say that, I mean, it's if you do it to a certain, so let me backtrack just a little bit. One of the things that we've seen that I've seen throughout my career is, and early on, particularly the reason I'm so adamant about this is because I learned early on in my career how harmful this can be. You know, the good thing about working with a financial advisor that's been around for 30, 40 years is that they've pretty much done or been through either with themselves or with clients or seen it happen. And for me, thank God it happened early in my career. This was 92, 93. And the big fear of missing out stock back then was Telefonos de Mexico. So I'm dating myself now. But that was basically the telephone carrier of Mexico. And that stock was just going up every single day. The Latin American markets were explosive. They were just exceeding our markets by a large, but there was no justifiable valuation for why Telefonos de Mexico, which is basically Verizon or a utility, should be trading at 25, 50 times earnings. But it kept going up in value and everybody was buying it, all the mutual funds. And so me as a new financial advisor, I was thinking, well, this is what you do, right? You put your money in and you want it to grow quickly and your clients are happy. And this mm-hmm. is where the institutions are going. Well, what happened next was the Mexican government devalued the peso. So what do you think happened? What do you think happened to Telefonos de Mexico?
Oh, about devalued. Everything went half.
Exactly. And there ain't no pain like the pain of a devalued currency. So what that taught me early on is fear of missing out will get you some way, somehow. You don't know where it's going to come from. You don't know where that arrow or that dagger is going to fly, but it's going to catch you eventually. And you just don't know why, because the valuation gets so high that the optimism is so, so good. And we can see this now, right? We can see it. If you look at the market and you look at these particular companies that are very, very high valuations, oh, when you hear about them, you all you hear is optimism, right?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's just talking about how good they are, how this time it's different, how the economy's changed, how these guys got the key to the market. Well, what happens, what we found is what happens when you think you've got the key to the market?
The locks change.
That's it. Yeah. Locks change. So these are good graphics to keep in your head, you know? So that's what we want to combat, is that psychological and the damage is, it can be when you're winning, when it's working, your mind has a tendency to really overproject the positive when it comes to investment performance or gains or successes. And, you know, and it has a way of downplaying the negative or the downsides that we've done or the money that lost. Have you ever talked with any of your friends about investing and they'll tell you about, you know, all the winners they've had? Have you ever had that conversation?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You know, yeah.
It sounds like social media.
Yeah, yes.
For the one win, you have 5,000 losses out there.
Right. But, you know, to their credit, people just have, the brain is protective against loss, because if all we did was structurally thought about all of our losses, our self-esteem would be pretty low, right?
You're yeah, that's true.
Walking around, yeah. Heading in your head. So the brain, it really wants to focus on the successes and the wins and tries to minimize the losses. And so that is magnified in investing.
Mm-hmm.
And fear of missing out plays right into that, because if you had a big win in the past, your mind kind of focuses on that big win. It doesn't focus on the 5 to 6 losses that you had to get that one win. And those 5 to 6 losses are far greater in the whole than the one win you had.
Yeah. You described my whole lottery experience.
Yeah.
It's so much fun to get that one win, but if you add it all up, it's like, wow, that's a lot of coffee.
Yeah. Well, you can see the fear of missing out easily illustrated in the lotto. Cause when the lotto gets very expensive I've never bought a lotto ticket. So
I buy one for you.
Yeah, well, you know, I wouldn't scratch it or whatever they do. But yeah, have you ever noticed that the line gets relatively a lot larger, the larger that pot gets?
It's crazy.
Yeah.
And people just, they get that crowd mentality, like, buy ticket, must buy tickets. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's well over what they even should afford, if anything. I mean, you know, I mean, really, you're going to drop $100 on that?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, wow.
I almost think it's sad in a way, because I sometimes see people in line to buy these tickets, and I'm thinking to myself, all these years have probably just put that in a good mutual fund or just as an exchange traded fund, you'd have so much more at the end of 15 to 20 years. But that fear of missing out, that opportunity of that one quick hit, it keeps people coming back. And so, you know, as an investor, we want to limit that thought as much as we possibly can.
So what do you do when the investor says, Ken, man, this stock's hot. I feel it.
Yeah. Also, we have to look at it and say, okay, I know that you feel it. Now let's put this through the prism of the greater fool theory, valuation, and why you want to own it. So if you fundamentally want to own the company because you do believe in its long-term metrics, that's fine. You know, that's great. So what are we going to pay for? You know, I had somebody, one of my earliest mentors, you know, when I first started, we had a lot of guys that were just about to retire and they had been in the industry since the 50s. And, you know, they were kind enough to always have an open door policy for me. And I mean, I walked through that open door a lot. I abused privilege, but I remember some of the things that they would say was, you know, I like Volkswagens. I wouldn't pay $100,000 for one. And it just kind of stuck with me. So, you know, even if you like a stock, what are you willing to pay for it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you wouldn't anything in your life, you wouldn't go to a car lot and pay 5 times the value of that car. Right? You wouldn't go anything, you know, even in this inflationary time, maybe you would, but nowhere would you really not consider value in the pricing equation. right?
Yeah.
I mean, do you, when you shop or when you do something, or you and Paula go, when you're looking for a vacation, do you throw value out completely and just whatever the price is, let's just pay it?
Well, as a side note, Adele did feel that way. Okay. I've never paid that much for a ticket in my life, but it offset with the fact that her talent and skill is well worth it.
Right. So you put a value.
Exactly.
What is it? So yeah, right. So you're going to have a higher alpha on a particular, so you're going to have to pay a little bit more for a mm-hmm. particular experience. Now you have to put a value on that. So let's say the tickets for Adele were 500. Would you have paid 5,000 for them?
No, realistically, that would have, no.
Right. There's a point where you're still having the valuation conversation in your head, regardless of how talented the individual concert you want to go to. So just ask, as an investor, you have to have some form of self-discipline and look at, all right, let's put a value on this. Let's say, okay, historically, what does this look like? What do these type of companies, what is the valuation that is reasonable?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So you're not that little kid taking that marshmallow instead of waiting 2 hours to get two, you're taking the one now. Right. So we're trying to get that process. So how do you combat this? The best way to do that is you have to go back to your why you were investing in the first place.
Yeah. Right?
I mean,
just stick with the plan. I mean, you're looking for long term.
Is buying this company at this inflated valuation, does that
an unknown foreseeable future,
which could go higher.
Yeah.
But there's, you know, usually Warren Buffett said it best. The market in the short term is a voting machine. In the long term, it's a weighing machine. And that weight is earnings. And the vote is people that are just buying. Right. But it always, that scale always comes back to balance. And so you have to weigh that. If this company, everybody's buying, everybody's making so much money on right now, does it fit into my why? Do I need this to make my portfolio work?
Mm-hmm.
If it doesn't work, what will that effect be on my portfolio?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's going to answer a lot of the questions. Right. And then the other thing that people miss out on is, so, you know, they're always wanting to have the next Apple, right? Or the next great stock.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they want to have that in their portfolio to say, I bought it. Well, what people don't realize is that the biggest successes that I've had with my clients and the largest gains in individual companies have not come buying it when everybody else is buying it, but buying it when nobody's talking about it, or that it doesn't have any FOMO associated with it at all. And then it just becomes a FOMO experience, but you bought it far prior to that. Does that make any sense?
Yeah. It's more organic. Yeah. Excuse me. Organic in the long term.
Right. It's fundamental. You bought it based off of price and value. And it just so happens that the FOMO took over on it. You know, and then we can reevaluate whether it's something we want to continue to hold, or do we want to take advantage of other people's mania on that position.
Mm-hmm.
But it all goes back to your why and what's your purpose and your plan for the money. So if it doesn't fit into that, then, you know, maybe you don't buy the stock and you buy, you know, a ticket to Adele,
mm-hmm.
you know, or something like that. You just use it for an experience versus a bad experience down the road.
And that's, yeah. I mean, this is an investment, or is this a pleasure thing?
Right, right.
And if you have the money and can do it, you know, and it's not hurting the big plan, that's your choice.
Yeah, yeah. So at times, you know, in the past, what I've done is, if we have a really, really solid plan for a client, if everything is really on par, the base, I call it the serious money, is in a good place. It's managed well. It's doing what serious it's supposed money. To do.
Yeah.
You know, I oftentimes will, if I have a client that really, because my portfolios are boring, let's face it. They do they're exciting over a long period of time, but they're boring in the short term. If the client continually you know, wants to participate in something that's got a little bit more excitement to it, because, you know, on the growth side of the equation, it's not really my forte. I'm more of the dividend plotting type mm-hmm. of things. I will say, hey, take 5 to 10% of the portfolio and let's go with your ideas. As long as the 5 to 10% doesn't upset the 90.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense?
Yeah.
So if that 5 to 10%, if you had a cataclysmic experience with that, it wouldn't upset your purpose and plan for your money, nor make it so you couldn't reach your goals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'll sometimes let a client do that, but you have to have essentially a plan that where you've got some overage, you've got a lot of wiggle room.
Mm-hmm.
So for instance, if we do our analysis and you're coming out, and for those that are listening to this that don't have a financial plan with us, you know, we like to keep people in the 75 to 90 percentile in their portfolios.
For success rate.
So that means,
yeah.
And when we look at all the investment scenarios that we can in picture, that we can do data on past historical markets and things of that nature, 750 to 900 outcomes, you would meet or exceed your investments plan or your investment goals or outcomes. And that's a very, very high rate of success. And so we're looking at the worst markets, the best markets. And usually the gold standard is 750 to 900 meter exceeds. So if we have somebody that is in that 90 percentile to 95, you know, that's easy. If you want to do 5 to 10% in some, high risk growth speculative ideas, I think you should, far be it for me to say, because it's not going to upset what I'm trying to do or what we're trying to do. But, but if you're right at 75,
yeah,
or you're at 77 or 78, so you got tight margins, everything's got to go right. And we got to make sure we got to really watch the portfolio and be really a super, super careful and be a caretaker, and everything's, we got to be dialed in. I'm going to tell you, no, I don't think that's right for you.
Well, I think it's a good two marshmallow approach. I mean, it's safe.
Yeah. That's my feeling,
Yeah. And you want people to succeed. That's your business.
Yeah. We're in the success business. It was funny. So my son, he had knee surgery yesterday, and he was asking me, what a surgeon, it'd be kind of cool to be a surgeon, Dad. I said, yeah, cause I'm trying to, I'm not pressuring him, but I'm trying to just gently want him to come into my profession. Right. This is a wonderful profession. And I said to him, I go, listen, we're in the business where if you do your job right, we have 100% success rate. If you do your job right, the client does their job right, everybody does what they're supposed to do, which is a big if, right?
Mm-hmm. But
if we do what we're supposed to do, you've got a good client, good mentality, financial advisor, keeps his mind, manages the assets over a long period of time, the plan is in place, you have a very, very high likelihood of a high percentage of success. Okay. And I said, the challenge with somebody that's in the medical field, they don't always have, they have some not successes and people might die.
You're telling him this before his surgery.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it was you're right. I probably shouldn't have done that, but I'm a realist. and I said, I feel like that we can in this profession, we can have a higher success rate, greater outcomes without being wrong to the extent that something and like that could happen. So I just feel like if you can mitigate these FOMOs, fear of missing out, and just really coaching the investor to look out for these, I think that your average client can have a really, really high grade level of success. Now, I'm not doing so good with you if you're going to Vegas, though.
Hey, as that's an entertainment part.
And you're buying
save up for it. It was all paid for ahead of time. Everything was done. Didn't we? Yeah, it was all good.
Yeah, so I've got you going to Vegas and buying lotto tickets. This is
well, the lotto ticket goes under my coffee thing. You know, a lot of people buy coffee. It's $6 a day. Sometimes they're 10. I mean, it's crazy. And I give me a $2 ticket, call it good.
By the end of this, by the time you retire, hopefully we'll have you in a position where, you know, Vegas isn't an option, and then you no longer buy lotto.
Well, I hate to say Vegas. It could have been anywhere, and I'd have probably went to see Adele.
Okay.
Because I'm not a huge fan. Nothing against Vegas, but it's just, you know, it's for everyone else, yeah, in my opinion. Yeah. But hey, part of what I know you do is helping people with these FOMO and all these things and stuff is you have webinars.
Yeah.
So what do you got coming up?
Yeah. So
got an email for one here.
Yeah. This is something new we're going to be doing this year. We're going to be doing one a month on different topics. So, you know, the podcast kind of gives you just a surface level view. On the webinars, we're going to go deep into the details, into the data, the facts. We're going to use specific examples, really, really kind of take a more surgical approach to the topics. But, you know, they're going to be varying. The one we got coming up is the four stages of tax planning in retirement. So, you know, it gives us a good 45 minutes to go into each of the four stages there, because there's some definite things that you can do to reduce your taxes. And I think that with our deficits, that's going to be more important as we go forward. We're going to have something on cybersecurity. You know, we've talked briefly on one of the podcasts on that. Medicaid and Medicare planning. We're going to talk into some of that. State planning.
Is it good?
Yeah. It's going to be topics that everybody, and they're going to be, you know, interactive. So whereas this is a kind of a one-way deal, it's just you and I talking, but with the webinar, we'll get some interaction and clients can ask questions, and I think it's going to be great. I'm going to really enjoy it, just the interaction.
So I would go to orcawealth.com, orcawealth.com, and just...
Orcawealth.com is going to, they'll all be listed on there.
Okay.
You can contact us, get on our mailing list or our distribution list for the monthly webinars, and we will send you an invite to those. So yeah, we're pretty excited about that.
And you also can call the office, I think.
Yeah.
Let me check it out. Yeah, there you are. 727-938-1600.
That's it. Yep. And
orcawealth.com.
We'll put you on the distribution list. And as I said, you know, those are just, you know, education's key for me. An educated investor is a good investor.
Knowledge is power, baby.
Knowledge is, in this industry, it is so important. My best clients are the best educated, and we try as a practice to educate. And that's what we do. And then it makes our job easier, because then the client understands why what we're doing meets their why. And it just makes for a much smoother path and smoother ride as the clients go through retirement. So yeah, that's, reach out to us and we'll get you on the list.
Thank you very much, Ken. Had a great time today talking to you. I hope you did too.
Yeah, enjoyed it as always.
Right on. So until next time, Ken Ouellette at Orca Wealth Management, and Don helping him out, talking on the side, asking the weird questions, because I don't know anything. And here we are, one podcast down. And as always, make sure you like the podcast, because we get more people to experience us and ask questions and things like that. I want to get the word out, and Ken wants to help as many people as possible. Like us and have a great day. Right, Ken?
Yes, sir. Thanks, Don.
Right on. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you for listening to A Life Well Lived. Grow, preserve, and transfer your wealth with Ken Ouellette, CPM. Click the subscribe button below to be notified when new episodes become available. The information covered and posted represents the views and opinions of the guest and does not necessarily represent the views or opinions of Orca Wealth Management, LLC. The content has been made available for informational and educational purposes only. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional investing advice. Always seek the advice of your financial advisor or other qualified financial service provider with any questions you may have regarding your investment planning. Orca Wealth Management LLC does not provide legal or tax advice. Clients should seek the advice of a qualified attorney or accountant as necessary.